Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is February the 23rd. We are beginning Parshas Korach on page 820. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohath ben Levi. Korach, the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, took Vidasan v'Aviram ben Eliav, and Dasan and Aviram, the sons of Eliav, Va'on ben Peles, and also On ben Peles, and these last three people, meaning Dasan and Aviram and On, are all B'nai Reuven. They all come from the tribe of Reuven. There is a big problem with this pasuk, because we have a subject, we have a predicate.
Tell us what they did.
We have no object. What did they take?
He took them.
Doesn't say that. Doesn't say he took them. Says Korach took and Dasan and Aviram and On ben Peles.
Why is it separated in English?
Okay. So that takes a little bit of a fancy translation. There are those who translate. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
But the verb is vayikach, and he took. So it is a difficult pasuk to translate because it does not tell us what he took, and the next pasuk doesn't either. The next pasuk begins with a new verb, vayakumu lifnei Moshe, and they stood up before Moshe. So it doesn't tell us what did Korach take. So, as was pointed out, the English translates it here as that he separated himself. So, the way that he took would mean to separate himself is you'd have to say that he took himself to the side. In other words, away from everybody else. He took himself outside of the camp or outside of Moshe Rabbeinu, and he now is ready to fight. So that would be one way of translating it, which is not the typical way of translating Vayikach, but that does work. Now some say, we find the verb word kacht, which means to take, we find it when you physically take something. You physically pick something or take something, that's kach. We also find it to mean acquisition. Vayikach could mean to buy or purchase something, to acquire something. And we also find it to mean to convince, to encourage or convince. So we find the phrase kachenu bidvarim, take him with words, means to convince somebody of something. So someone is saying it means that Korach convinced others to join him. Now it doesn't say, although it mentions Dasan and Aviram and On, but the pasuk doesn't say and Korach took Dasan and Aviram and On. It says and Korach took and also Dasan and Aviram and On. It sounds like they were also ones who took. It sounds like these were the ones who convinced others to join in this rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. As we were about to see, there are going to be 250 other leaders of the people who are going to join into this rebellion. And later on, we're going to find that Korach is going to manage to whip up a lot of people into a frenzy over what's going on. So Korach was a charismatic and popular person. Korach was someone who was good at getting people to do things. That was something which was one of his strengths. And that obviously can be used in very positive ways. And here, it was used in a very negative way. That he used his power of persuasion to get many people to join into this rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. Something which a person has to be aware of. If they have the ability to persuade others, to use it appropriately, Hashem does not take kindly when a person uses their power of persuasion in a negative way. But in addition to that, most people who are on the receiving end of that, who get persuaded, beware of who is doing the persuading. One has to be careful not to be persuaded to do things that are inappropriate.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a very strong word, Vayikach. It conjures to me that reading that word is you're taking something that doesn't belong to you.
It could mean that, but that doesn't seem to mean that here because there's no object. Right, but it could mean that. Yeah.
Rabbi, Korach is Kach with a resh.
Yeah.
Like, and Reuven is the people he's taking, which starts with a resh. Does anybody say anything about that?
I don't know. I don't know. Could be, but I don't know.
Okay.
So they're the leaders of this rebellion. Now, before we go further, if you'll hold the place here and turn back to Parshas Vayechi. Yeah. Parshas Vayechi, page 276. Here Yaakov is giving brachos to his children before he dies. And for Shimon and Levi, he admonishes them for their killing out of the city of Shechem and also for their sale of Yosef. So he is concerned about their alliance of Shimon and Levi. So in Pasuk Vav, verse 6, Yaakov Avinu says, "Bisodam al tavo nafshi, bikalam al techad kvodi," which means, the English says, "Into their conspiracy may my soul not enter; with their congregation do not join, O my honor." So Yaakov is really extolling himself. He's asking that he not be associated with things that are going to happen later in history from the children of Levi and the children of Shimon. So the children of Shimon, what he's asking for is that his name not be mentioned in the episode of Zimri when he takes the Midianite woman, Cozbi, and Pinchas kills them. He doesn't want to be associated with Zimri, even though Zimri is a descendant of Yaakov Avinu. He doesn't want his name associated over there, and it's not. Yaakov Avinu's name is not mentioned. That's the first phrase, Bisodam al tavo nafshi, into their conspiracy may my soul not enter. But in the next phrase, Bikalam al techad kvodi, with their congregation do not join, O my honor. So the phrase is their congregation. I don't want my honor to join in their congregation. Now if you look back at where we are, we haven't read it yet, but if you look at Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, it says, Vayikahalu al Moshe ve'al Aaron. They congregated against Moshe and Aaron. Yaakov Avinu was asking that although the children of Levi, Korach is from Levi, are going to behave inappropriately over here, that Yaakov is asking that his honor not be associated. That he, Yaakov Avinu, not be associated with Korach's congregation. And that's why in the first pasuk we just read, it says, Vayikach Korach, the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kehas, the son of Levi. It could have gone further. Could have said the son of Yaakov. But Yaakov requested that his name not be associated with this sad episode. And Hashem listened to him, and Yaakov's name is not associated over here. Clearly, when Yaakov said it back in Parshas Vayechi, he was hoping to stave off what would be a disaster in the future. Unfortunately, it was to no avail, and Korach does his rebellion. We know that Korach is going to, back on page 820, we know that Korach is going to rebel and question the authenticity of Aaron as the Kohen Gadol. So we're going to talk specifically about what he was complaining, but The Gemara tells us that there are several factors that made Korach susceptible to this type of behavior. The primary factor, the Gemara says, is Korach's wealth. Korach was the wealthiest person in Klal Yisrael. Now, the Jews were generally wealthy at this time because we had the spoils from Egypt, we had the spoils from the Red Sea. We were generally wealthy, but Korach was wealthier than everybody else. Korach discovered one of the three stashes of money that Yosef HaTzadik had hidden away before he died with all the wealth that he had gathered for Egypt from the days of the famine. He split it into three parts and hid them in different places, and one of those was revealed to Korach. And Korach was an incredibly wealthy person. And the Gemara tells us that wealth brought him to arrogance, which is always a danger of wealth. The danger of poverty is denial of Hashem. That's the danger of poverty. When a person goes through trials and tribulations, the danger there is to deny Hashem, is to say that Hashem does not exist, to instead to say that it can't be, I'm so mistreated, it can't be, and to end up denying Hashem. And the danger of wealth is the reverse. It's arrogance. It's also a denial of Hashem, but it's in a different way. It's saying that I'm self-sufficient, I'm important, I deserve. And that's what ended up making Korach, it threw him off. His wealth, he corrupted him.
Rabbi Kransky, when you say that Yosef hid this amount of wealth, I mean, I'm sure that it was ethical and moral and legal, but it sounds kind of strange because there are people in power. When the communists were in power, I mean, communism is everybody's equal, but yet they kept a lot for themselves. He was in control. Where did he, was this, what kind of money was this?
The government's money.
What's that?
It was the government money. It was the money that he had collected. He was the second in command.
Collected for Mitzrayim or for himself?
No. Collected. People paid money for all the food.
Right, but that goes to the government, I thought.
Well, he is the government. He's second in command.
Oh, so he.
This is a dictatorship.
Oh, so he kept all that money, and then Korach found it, and he didn't give it to Moshe. He kept it for himself.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah.
Paro let him keep it. Paro didn't care.
Right.
He had enough money and Yosef was next.
So it seems. It also does not seem that Korach was wrong for taking the money. He found it. Finders keepers. It doesn't seem like there was anything wrong with Korach keeping the money. But it did get to his head.
Do we know what happened to the other two pious?
The Gemara says what happened to them. I'm trying to remember what happened. One was discovered by Korach. One was discovered by... don't remember offhand who discovered the other pile. And the third one stayed hidden. But there was...
Stayed hidden?
Stayed hidden, yeah.
There was an opportunity there.
You go for it. Bert, go for it.
Don't do some excavation, you might find.
Does it say where he...
Clash trip to the Middle East.
If he says where, it's not it.
I mean, you know, in the castle, in the
under
you know.
The pyramid.
I don't know.
The Geniza.
The Geniza, right. Yeah.
It's a treasure.
Right. Now, what really triggered his jealousy in that what got him really moving over here? What made him, it's the arrogance that made him susceptible to it. But what was the real issue? So he is going to argue that Aaron shouldn't be the Kohen Gadol. But the root of his argument really comes from a different place. And that is, again, if you'll please hold the place over here, we'll turn back to Parshas Bamidbar. In Parshas Bamidbar on page 740, on page 740, the Torah is listing the various branches of the Levium. We have Gershon, we have Kehas, and we have Merari. And Korach comes from Kehas. Korach comes from the second son of Levi, who is Kehas. Same branch that Moshe and Aaron come from. So, in that branch, the Torah tells us in Pasuk Lamed Beis 32, this is a faithful Pasuk. No, sorry, wrong Pasuk. There is a faithful Pasuk, but it's not that one. Pasuk Lamed, verse 30. Unesiveis avlu mishpachos ha-kehasi. Who was the leader of the family of Kehas? Each of the branches of Levi had their own nasi, had their own leader. And the leader was Elitzafan ben Uziel. His name was Elitzafan ben Uziel. Elitzafan ben Uziel was a cousin of Korach, and a cousin of Moshe, and a cousin of Aaron. And Korach was jealous of the appointment of Elitzafan ben Uziel as the leader of Kehas. So why is that? We've gone through this before, and we'll go through it now again. As we know, we have Levi. Levi is the tribe we're talking about. And Levi has three sons. So he has Gershon. He has Kehas, which is the one we're interested in now. And he has Merari. Kehas has four sons. First one's name is Amram. Second one's name is Yitzhar. Third one's name is Chevron. And the fourth one's name is Uziel. This is all spelled out in Parshas Va'era. I looked just now to see if they had a chart in the Stone of Rome, which they do not. But in Parshas Va'era, the Torah goes through the family tree of Levi. Amram has three children. What are his three children's names?
Miriam, Aaron.
Okay, so in age order, it's Miriam, Aaron, and Moshe. We're only going to put down Aaron and Moshe right now because they're the ones that are relevant to this discussion. So Amram has Aaron, and he has Moshe. Yitzhar has a few children. So gesund. His bechor name is Korach. Korach, as it says in the parasha we just read, Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehas ben Levi. He's a great grandson of Levi. Uziel has actually two sons that we know of, maybe three sons we know of, but the one we're interested in now, the one that we are interested in is Elitzafan. Okay. So Korach said as follows. My father, my grandfather, had four sons, Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, Uziel. The oldest son, Amram, had two sons. It makes sense that the oldest son would have the first choice. They would have the top picks of positions. So Moshe Rabbeinu becomes the melech. He becomes effectively the king. He ran the nation. He ran everything in the wilderness. And Aaron gets to be the Kohen Gadol. But then Korach says the next appointment is to be the Nasi, the head of the branch of Kehas. So Korach says, well, my father is the second son of Kehas, and I am the eldest son of my father. Amram has no more sons. Therefore, the next appointment should go to me. And he fully expected that he would get this appointment of the leader of Kehas. But he was leapfrogged over, and the appointment was not given to him, nor was it given to any sons of Chevron, Rather, it was given to the youngest brother's son, Elitzaphan. The younger cousin received this appointment of the leader, the leader of the branch of Kehas. Korach said, if Moshe Rabbeinu says that Elitzaphan ben Uziel should be the head of Kehas, he must not be getting direction from Hashem. Because Hashem would never have done that. Hashem would have kept the proper order of age. And therefore, since he leapfrogged over me and gave it to Elitzaphan, that proves that Moshe Rabbeinu is actually making it up as he goes along. It's not coming from Hashem. And therefore, Korach says, if the appointment of Elitzaphan ben Uziel was a facade, was a fake, wasn't meant to be, well then the appointment of Aaron might have also been Moshe's idea out of his own head. And therefore Korach steps forward and says, Moshe, you are making it up as you go along. This is not from Hashem. It's nepotism. You chose Aaron to be the Kohen Gadol because he's your brother, and you like Elitzaphan more than you like me, and that's why you made him the head of Kehas. So the trigger was not Aaron becoming Kohen Gadol, because Korach was able to explain that. In his mind, despite his arrogance, he was able to explain. That makes sense. They're older. They come from the older brother. I get that. He was able to let that go. But that it would leapfrog to Elitzaphan, that can't be. And therefore, Korach says, Moshe Rabbeinu must be making it up as he goes along, and he steps forward to argue not only on the appointment of Elitzaphan, but on the appointment of Aaron as Kohen Gadol, which is what he's about to do. Yeah.
So how does he explain that instead of when the Levi is encountered as a tribe, that it goes to Yosef's two sons and not Reuben's two sons?
Okay, so there's
a lot of
inconsistencies. First of all, as you're pointing out, within the tribes, it doesn't really work. Besides, Levi is not the first one, he's the third. Levi has two older brothers, Reuven and Shimon, and they were leapfrogged over and went to Levi. Even within Levi's children, Gershon is the older brother, Kehas is number two, and yet the appointment goes to Kehas's sons. So that the special appointments go through Levi to Kehas, that doesn't seem to bother Korach. But that it goes from Amram and jumps over to Uziel's son, that bothers him. So it's true, there are inconsistencies here, but this is the trigger, this is what's going on in his mind.
So this is coming from Hashem to Moshe to appoint those?
Yeah, it's all from Hashem.
Okay.
It's all from Hashem. But Korach is convinced that Moshe Rabbeinu is making it as he goes along because it doesn't fit.
Okay.
It doesn't fit. Yeah. Now this is the way jealousy works. We've all been jealous, and we all know that it makes a person think, or not think actually, makes a person think funny. A person's mind gets, because we can't see differently because we're jealous. And this is what happened with Korach. Now, there's another very important factor about Korach, and that is, this is Korach's ancestry. But we also have a very important fact about Korach's descendants. Korach has some very illustrious descendants, one in particular. As we're going to learn later, Korach's entire family are subject to the punishment that Korach is going to have, but that his sons will do teshuvah. And from those sons comes, who knows who's the very great leader that we had, who's the direct descendant of Korach? Not Shaul, but you're close. Shmuel Hanavi, who is compared to Moshe and to Aaron, comes from Korach, from Korach's sons, when they do teshuvah. So Korach sees that he is going to produce, he sees in Ruach HaKodesh, that he's going to produce this incredible descendant. Therefore, Korach is convinced that he is invincible, nothing can happen to him because he's going to produce this great descendant. So he's not afraid of getting hurt or punished in a severe way in this fiasco because he knows that Shmuel is going to come from him. So that...
And Tehillim.
What's that?
They're Tehillim.
So that's not Shmuel, that's Shmuel, that's the sons of Korach, the Bnei Korach, they write Tehillim. They are very illustrious people, but the biggest of them all is the descendant is Shmuel. And the that also serves to mislead Korach into thinking that he's the man, not Moshe. He had Nevuah, he had Ruach HaKodesh. He was able to see it. Yeah. Which also shows that Korach had been a great person. We don't get visions like that. At least, we don't tell people when we do. So, but
get visions, but not like that.
Right. Okay. Right. But Korach did see this. And, that also served to stoke that arrogance. Here, my grandson is going to be Shmuel, or my great-grand, whatever, descendant, he's going to be Shmuel. So it made Korach feel very, very important, and it led him further and further away. But it's important to note that he was a big person, because he wouldn't have had that vision had he not been a big person. So he was at one point a big person, but unfortunately, this precipitated a fall. Yeah.
Didn't Potiphar's wife have the same kind of thing that she...
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
He didn't learn anything from that story?
I guess not. Potiphar's wife saw that there would be, that she would have descendants from Yosef. She didn't realize it was her daughter mm-hmm. who would be marrying Yosef, Asnas. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Okay. So this is the background for Korach. So we have his wealth, we have the issue of his cousin Elitzaphan, and we have the issue of his descendant Shmuel, these things coming together that lead Korach to his rebellion. Along with Korach, we have an unholy alliance with Dasan and Aviram. Dasan and Aviram have been featured before, always negatively. Their names have not been mentioned in the Chumash. But Chazal have told us that the various episodes before Parshas Korach, that some of them were involved Dasan and Aviram. The very first one is in Parshas Shmos, when Moshe Rabbeinu sees two Jews fighting, and he says to the Rasha, "Why are you hitting your friend?" He's talking to Dasan and Aviram. Dasan and Aviram are also the ones who are malshin, like in the bracha of Shmoneh Esrei, v'lal malshinim. It means those who, I'll use the middle school term, snitch. And those who give give over their fellow Jews to the government. Mm-hmm. So they went and told Paro that Moshe Rabbeinu had killed an Egyptian. And later we find that they are mentioned, they're the ones who accost Moshe Rabbeinu when the work gets worse, that Paro takes away the straw. They're the ones who tell Moshe Rabbeinu that he only made things worse and he shouldn't have come. He's making things bad for the Jews. Later on, it is Dasan and Aviram who leave over the mun when Hashem says not to leave over the mun. And it is Dasan and Aviram who go out to search for mun on Shabbos when Hashem says not to search for the mun on Shabbos. So they've shown up before, and here they show up again, this time by name. It is important here as well to note that Dasan and Aviram, despite the fact that they, every time we meet up with them, they're doing something wrong, they got out of Egypt. They did not die during the plague of darkness, which means they were not people who had the flaw of those who were killed in the plague of darkness. What was the reason for those who died in the plague of darkness? Those were Jews who really didn't want to leave, that they really were not interested in going and getting the Torah and going on to Eretz Yisrael, which would be a life of responsibility to Hashem. There were many Jews who were not interested in that, even though slavery was no picnic, but they preferred that over leaving Mitzrayim, getting the Torah, and going to Israel, and then being under the scrutiny of Hashem all the time, they prefer to stay in Egypt. So those Jews died in Egypt. Dasan and Aviram did not die in Egypt, which means they did want to leave. They did want to get the Torah, they did want to go to Israel. They did want all of that. But unfortunately, throughout the process, they have a problem, particularly with the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu. They're constantly a thorn in the side of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it will come to a head here in Parshas Korach. So they see an opportunity, and they join Korach's rebellion. There's another reason why they join, which I'll mention in a moment. But first, we also have On ben Peles. On ben Peles is not mentioned earlier in the Chumash, nor is he mentioned later in the Chumash. He is a new person on the scene. We know he's from Reuven, and we know that he joins Korach's rebellion. However, later, we don't see him anymore. He's mentioned here. He is not mentioned later on when Korach and his group are going to be killed, including Dasan and Aviram. On ben Peles is not mentioned. Here he is mentioned by name. He is not mentioned in the other places by name. So it is therefore, Chazal tell us, they see from here, that On ben Peles did not remain as in the rebellion, that he later pulled out.
Was it his wife?
We'll get to that. Correct. So On ben Peles pulled out of the rebellion. But it leads to a curiosity. Because if On ben Peles did teshuva and pulled out of the rebellion, why would the Torah allow his name to be written over here? It seems unfair that here, yes, he did something wrong, but he did teshuva. Now we know if a person does a proper teshuva, it undoes the bad. So if On ben Peles managed to extricate himself from the evil of Korach and Dasan and Aviram and the other men who were with him, so then either mention On ben Peles positively or don't mention him at all. But instead, the only mention we get is a negative mention, and then he's not mentioned at all. So Chazal tell us the reason why On ben Peles' name is mentioned negatively is because the Torah wants to bring out in the Torah Sheba'al Peh that the way that he was saved, as all of you mentioned, was through his wife. And in fact, the Medrash wants to contrast Mrs. On and Mrs. Korach. And the Torah is actually telling us, if you want to understand why Korach ended up where he ended up and On ended up where he ended up, it's for the same reason. It's their wives. And On ben Peles' wife saved him, and Korach's wife buried him. Meaning, what's that?
Reminds me of Haman's wife.
Haman's wife, right. Right. Yeah. So Korach, it's not that his wife didn't have anything to work with. Korach was already arrogant, etc. But On ben Peles was likewise fully involved in this rebellion. On ben Peles himself, as we already mentioned, was a persuader, not a persuadee. He was a persuader, just like Korach, just like Dasan, just like Avira. He was getting others to join this rebellion. He was one of those people. He was a leader of the rebellion, which means he really had issues with Moshe Rabbeinu. Where did those issues come from? We don't have the kind of background about On that we have about Korach. Was he wealthy? Was he arrogant? We don't know. But there were issues, clearly, that led him to this rebellion. Nevertheless, his wife put a stop to it. And the Medrash tells us that his wife said to him that, I don't understand. What do you gain over here? Right now, Moshe Rabbeinu is running the nation. And if Korach wins, so Korach's winning the nation. What do you gain? You don't gain either way. So what's the point of this whole thing? And she managed to convince her husband that there was no point. Now, the Medrash doesn't go through the conversation back and forth between Owen and his wife. It just says that he said to her, okay, but I'm stuck now because I'm already part of the rebellion. That's the way the Medrash says it. But you can imagine it was not a 2-second conversation. She chipped away. She said this and he refused and she said, and then finally she won out. She convinced him that you're what are you doing? What are you doing? So she saw clearly, he did not, but over time she managed to convince him that he's not in a good place. And he realized that he wasn't in a good place, and then he appealed to her for help. He said, but what can I do? So that's where she stepped in and used her creativity and her wisdom to save him. But the real creativity and wisdom was convincing him. Once he was convinced, okay, so now it takes some interesting thing. But whatever the plan is going to be, you can't do the plan if he's staunchly involved in the rebellion. Korach's wife, rather than trying to chip away, she egged him on. She egged him on. She said, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu this, Moshe Rabbeinu that. And we'll talk about what she did in a minute, what she pointed out to make Korach even more upset than he already was. So the Medrash, of course, is highlighting the difference between the two wives. Now, in the end, as we know, the way that Ohn ben Peles' wife saved him was that when he finally agreed, and he said, what am I supposed to do now? She said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And they had a meal together, she made sure he would drink, and he fell asleep, and then he was inside the tent, and then she sat at the entrance of the tent, and she uncovered her hair. So that when Korach's men came to get Ohn ben Peles, they came, and they tried to come to the tent, and they saw her hair was uncovered, and they said, and they ran off. They couldn't approach the tent.
What's her name?
It doesn't, I don't know her name. I don't think it tells us her name. So so that's how she saved her husband. And the fascinating thing over here is she's held up as an example. She's an example for all of us as a role model to follow. And she did it by doing something which is normally considered to be not tsanua, not modest. But she used that, we'll call it lack of modesty, in a positive way. In other words, it's not a lack of modesty because it was done for the right reason, in the right context, to save somebody's life. And that's what she did, and that was the appropriate thing to do. She did what was the right thing to do, and she's held up as an example for that. Now, Korach's wife said to Korach, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, I say Rabbeinu, they probably didn't, but Moshe Rabbeinu, you know that he ridiculed you. He ridiculed you in public. Where did he ridicule you in public? So we learned back in Parshas Bahaloscha that the process of taking the Levim and making them into the special group that is to serve Hashem, that there was a whole process. They had to bring karbonos, etc. The whole thing had to happen. One of the things the Levim had to do was they had to shave all of their hair. They had to shave all of their hair. And they did. They all had to shave their hair completely. So Mrs. Korach said to Korach, you see that Moshe Rabbeinu, he wanted to make a fool out of you. He made you shave your hair completely, totally off. So he made a fool out of you. So Korach here did have a little bit of sense and a little bit of logic, and he said to his wife, yeah, but Moshe Rabbeinu is also a Levi. So he also had to shave off his entire head, beard, everything. So doesn't make sense. Yeah, he ridiculed me, but he ridiculed himself. Mm-hmm. So he obviously did it for the right reason. It wasn't ridicule. This is what Hashem said to do. So Mrs. Korach said, no. He wanted to ridicule you so badly, he was willing to go through it himself in order to ridicule you. When he went home, he had a good laugh. That's what Mrs. Korach said to Korach. And that she said he made that up also. That process of making you shave your hair, that was Moshe Rabbeinu's own idea, so he could have a good laugh at your expense. And even though he also had to do it, it was worth it to him so he could make fun of you and ridicule you. So as Korach is getting more and more angry and upset and jealous over Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron, etc., Mrs. Korach is egging him on. Ohn ben Peles, Mrs. Ohn, is Diffusing it, right? Diffusing it and proving to him that this is pointless. This makes no sense whatsoever. And Owen's wife saves him, and Korach's wife, it's just the opposite, and they all end up getting killed, as we will see. One last point of introduction over here is the configuration of the camp. I'm going to erase this. The configuration of the camp of the Jews, which was arranged in Parashas Bamidbar. The Jews right now are encamped according to, as you know, the flags, the way they are supposed to be encamped. So the way it worked was you had the Mishkan in the middle. The Mishkan was in the middle of the Jewish people. And we'll just put here, we'll put here an M for Mishkan. Okay. The Mishkan's in the middle. So around the Mishkan, you had the different tribes. But on the before you get to the tribes, you had the branches of Levi. Now, I'm going to put the directions here. We'll put east over here. And here's north. And here's west. And here is south. On the east side of the Mishkan were Moshe and Aaron. They were on the east side of the Mishkan. On the south side of the Mishkan was Kehas. On the west side of the Mishkan was Gershon. And on the north side of the Mishkan was Merari. Now then we have 12 tribes, 3 on each side, and each one was led by one of the tribes. So there were 4 leaders of tribes. On the east side, it was Yehuda. Yehuda was the leader. And who was with Yehuda? Anybody know? Yisachar and Zebulun. The Gemara tells us, Tov l'tzadik, Tov l'shcheino. If it's good for the tzadik, it's good for his neighbor. Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun were heavily influenced by being neighbors of Moshe and Aaron. And as a result, all of them became great Torah learners. Yisachar is known for that, but even Yehuda and Zvulun as well became Torah learners. Everybody thinks of Zvulun as the businessmen, which they were, but they also became great Torah learners because of their proximity to Moshe and Aaron. On the south side, we have the leader is Reuven. And the two other ones are Shimon and Gad. So on the south side, we have Kehas. Kehas is where Korach lives. The Gemara tells us, Oy l'rasha, Oy l'shcheino. Woe to the Rasha, woe to his neighbors. Reuven's people were heavily influenced by Korach because of their proximity in where they camped. And therefore Korach found fertile ground within Reuven, and where he found Dasan and Aviram and On, and others from Reuven as well, because of the proximity in the south side from Kehas to Reuven. So that's another important point in how this developed, that Reuven becomes drawn in to the Mishugas of Korach. Okay, so we have a few more minutes. Let's do just some of these psukim here. Pasuk Beis, verse 2, back on page 820. So all these people, Vayakumu lifnei Moshe, they stood up before Moshe, Va'anashim mibnei Yisrael chamishim u'masayim, and men from the Jews, 250. All of these were nisiei eda, leaders of the congregation, kriyei moed, those who had been called to meeting, meaning they'd been called to greatness by Hashem, anshei shem, men of name, meaning they were famous, they were well known. So the English here says, leaders of the assembly, those summoned for meeting, men of renown. So they were leaders of the people. Vayikahalu al Moshe ve'al Aaron, and they gathered against Moshe and Aaron. Vayomru alehem, and they said to them, Rav lachem, it's enough for you. Meaning you've taken too much for yourselves. Ki chol ha'eda kulam kedoshim u'vusacham Hashem. The entire nation are all sanctified and Hashem is in them. U'maduat hisnasu al kal Hashem. Why are you lording over the congregation of Hashem? Vayishma Moshe, and Moshe heard, Vayipol al panav, and he fell on his face. Moshe Rabbeinu was very afraid of this rebellion because he said, we've had the Egel HaZahav, the golden calf, we've had the Meraglim, we've had the spies, we've had the Misonim, we had those who complained, we've had so many tragedies already, and he saw this was going to be bad. This could not end well, what was happening here. And therefore Moshe fell on his face for fear of what would transpire with this rebellion. Now, they say to Moshe Rabbeinu, Rav Lachem, it's enough for you, because everybody is sanctified and Hashem is in them. So these phrases that the entire nation is sanctified, Hashem is within them. Where do they get the phrase Hashem is within them? The hint is it's in this week's parasha. If you look, let's hold the place here in 820. Let's look in this week's parasha Teruma. Hashem says to build a Mishkan. On page 444, Pasuk Ches, verse 8, bottom of the page, Va'asuli Mikdash, they should make for me a Mikdash, Vishachanti Bisocham, and I will dwell within them. Not only within Moshe, within Aaron, but I will dwell within all of the Jewish people. Korach and his men said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem is within everybody, not just you. Why are you lording over the Jewish people? But really, Korach and his men had a much more powerful argument than that. As they said, the entire nation is kadosh, is sanctified. You will recall that back in the time of Matan Torah, in Parashas Yisro, that the original plan had been that Hashem would speak to Moshe Rabbeinu, tell Moshe Rabbeinu all of the Aseres Hadibros, all the Ten Commandments. We would be there watching as Moshe Rabbeinu received this prophecy from Hashem. We would all collectively receive a prophecy that Moshe Rabbeinu is the prophet of Hashem. But we wouldn't be told anything else. And then Moshe Rabbeinu would tell us all of the Aseres Hadibros. We said we don't like that plan. Ritzonenu liros es malkenu. We want to see Hashem. We want to get communicated to directly. Now remember that the communication from Hashem for the Aseres Hadibros was not regular nevuah, not regular prophecy. Rather, it was Torah. As we've spoken about before, Torah is the highest level of prophecy. Regular prophecy is on a lower level than Torah. That's what it means that Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy is higher than all other prophets, because his prophecy is Torah, which is on a higher level. So we said, we don't want to get the Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu. We want to hear the Torah directly from Hashem. And Hashem said, that's a good request. I agree to it. And therefore, we're going to do it. You need to take extra steps of preparation. All husbands and wives have to separate and become tar and purify, just like Moshe Rabbeinu always has to remain pure. So too, if you want to receive Torah, meaning you want to hear from me this level of nevuah called Torah, then you all need to separate and you all need to purify. And we did. And then Hashem spoke directly to us, not through Moshe Rabbeinu, but directly to us. And we managed to last for 2 of the 10 commandments. But after that, we couldn't handle it anymore. And then we said, let's go back to the other plan, and Moshe Rabbeinu will be the one who will receive the Torah on our behalf.
Oh, but it's good to have backup.
Right, that's right. That's right. But for those first two, we managed it, and we did. We were all artificially elevated to the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. All of us heard those two commandments, Anochi and Lo Yielecha, the first two commandments of the Torah. We heard those directly from Hashem on the level of Torah. Even if we didn't really deserve that level of prophecy, we got that level of prophecy anyway. As I've told you many times, the Gemara says in Maseches Makos, Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Torah was commanded to us by Moshe. The gematria of the word Torah is 611. Tav is 400. Vav is 6. Resh is 200. That's 606. And then Hey is 5. 611. That's because there are 613 mitzvos. 611 were given to us through Moshe Rabbeinu. But the first two were not given to us through Moshe Rabbeinu. They were directly given to us by Hashem, because for that short time, we were temporarily elevated to the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, and we heard those dibros directly from Hashem. Korach and his men say to Moshe Rabbeinu, why should you and Aaron, why should you rule over everybody else? We are all sanctified. We all were on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, you don't deserve things any more than we do. Now, the argument is a difficult argument, because at the end of the day, we didn't make it. We only handled it for two of the 10 commandments. And after that, we said, no. Well, you know what? Moshe Rabbeinu is a good person to do this for us. And we kind of stepped out of it. So, yes, it's true that two were given directly to us, but the bulk of it was not given directly to us. And for good reason, we couldn't handle it. We're the ones running the other way. So how is it that Korach and his men use this kulam kedoshim, we're all sanctified, how is that a winning argument that Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't lead over us? I would say the other way around. If Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was able to handle what no one else could handle, well then it would appear that Moshe Rabbeinu should be the one to be the leader, because he's the one who can interface with Hashem. So it seems that their argument is that although it may be true that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to handle it, and we couldn't, but we did experience it, which means that we also deserve it. We may not be able to handle it, but that doesn't mean we don't deserve it. Just because a person has trouble handling a certain thing, that doesn't mean that if they could handle it, they wouldn't deserve to get it. You can have a group of people who all deserve a very delicious type of food, and one person, he's allergic to it, can't eat it, but he still deserves it. He still deserves the reward. They say, we deserve it. Look, we managed to also be on that level. So they're arguing, therefore, that the two of you should not necessarily be the leaders. Now, they can't be advocating anarchy. You can't run anything with anarchy. There's got to be a leader. Someone's got to be the leader. Now, of course, Hashem is our king, so Hashem could be the leader. But if Hashem is not choosing to micromanage and direct everything, someone's got to do it. So they're not saying there shouldn't be a leader at all, but they are saying, why should it be you? Why you, Moshe Rabbeinu? Why you, Aaron? Why should it be the two of you? Just because Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who managed to handle all of the Aseres HaDibros, that doesn't make him any better or more deserving than us. And therefore, we should also deserve to have a chance at this running. It's not necessarily the two of you who deserve to be the leaders. So now Moshe Rabbeinu has to respond. He falls on his face out of dismay, but now he's going to have to respond. We'll leave that Mitzvah Hashem for next time.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.